This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
British media say that calls for an end to the monarchy are grown stronger after the death of Queen Elizabeth. Russian troops regrouping in eastern Ukraine as Kyiv announces major territorial gains in several parts of Donetsk region. Millions of Muslim pilgrims heading for the Iraqi city of Karbala ahead of Erbain, a religious ritual to commemorate the third Shia Imam.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us.
Calls are growing louder for an end to the British monarchy, with many starting to debate the relevance of the royal family since the death of Queen Elizabeth on Thursday. The main anti-monarchy group, Republic, says it's getting an influx of supporters on social media and elsewhere. The group says, however, many people are refraining from openly expressing their opinions, and that's because they do not want to cause offense amid the emotional atmosphere and media focus on the story. The Republic is instead inviting people to be vocal and not to feel intimidated. It says they have every right to speak their minds about monarchy as a public office. Following Queen Elizabeth's death, her eldest son Charles has been named king. His ascension to the throne was proclaimed at a ceremony on Saturday. Okay, from London, I'm now joined by Saeed Purreza. Saeed, good to have you with us. So, tell us about these calls that are growing louder regarding actually questioning the relevance of the royal family and the monarchical system.
That's very true, Behruz. These calls have been around for a long time. For one, you have a prime minister now in this country who, at one point in her career as a Republican, called for the monarchy to be abolished, and this goes back to the 1990s. She may have since changed her mind, but that's what she said back then. So did many other people. You're looking at a time when one in four Britons are now considering the monarchy as an anachronistic institution that has to be gone. Now that the queen, that was the figurehead of this institution for some 70 years, is gone, has passed away, and will be laid to rest on September 11th. If you look at the different age groups have different feelings and ideas of the monarchy. There are statistics out there, for example, saying that if you look at the younger generation, people between the ages of 18 and 24, they say they don't see the point of the monarchy, that it doesn't belong to the 21st century and it has to be done away with. But then over 65s seem to want the monarchy to stay around. So opinions are split, not just in the UK, but in other countries as well, in the so-called realms where the queen was now the king, Charles III, the head of state, such as Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and in the Commonwealth of Nations, so-called, that were formed when the late queen took power after her father's death in 1953. So those things are happening as we speak. If you look at or ask the nationalists or Republicans in Northern Ireland, want reunification with the South, with the Republic of Ireland, and be part of the European Union, they would tell you that they want the monarchy to be gone as well. If you go to Scotland, the pro-independent Scots were asked last year, 2021, whether they would want the monarchy to be, or the monarch to be the head of state in the event of them gaining independence from the UK, and the answer was no, they didn't want that. They wanted Scotland to be a republic. And as I say, the outpouring of emotions, if you will, for the late monarch should not be mistaken for unwavering support for the monarchy itself, for the institution that the Queen embodied for so many years. And let's not forget that the heir to the throne, the man that has inherited what is left of the former British Empire, or whatever that the Queen pieced together for so many years, is a much less popular monarch. And we can look at some of the reasons why, from his affair with now his wife and queen consort Kamala Parks Bowles, to his high-profile divorce from his wife, Princess Diana, who died in a car crash in France all those years ago, to in more recent days, allegations of racism in the monarchy and the way his own son, Prince Harry, and his wife, Meghan Markle, were treated. The allegations against his brother, Prince Andrew, that rocked the monarchy yet again over his associations with the convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, and the settlement out of court with the victim, Virginia Giuffre, and question marks hanging over where that money came from. So, and this is again a monarch who has been revealed to have written those Black Spider memos between 2004 and 2005, trying to lobby government for all kinds of reasons, for a range of reasons. This is while the monarchy constitutionally is supposed to keep its nose out of politics.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Syed Purvis, my colleague in London. Now, almost 7 months into the war with Russia, Ukraine offensive to retake control of its territory is gathering pace. Here's the Ukrainian president talking about the scale of his army's achievements.
The movement of our soldiers in different directions of the front continues. At present, about 2,000 square kilometers of our territory have been liberated in the framework of active operations since the beginning of September.
Zelensky claims that the Russian army is fleeing the area and says that there is no place for what it calls occupiers in his country. The foreign ministry also said that advances show Ukrainian forces are able to defeat the Russian army. It urged Western countries to continue to deliver weapons. Russia has confirmed the drawdown from eastern Kharkiv, but it says the troops in Balaklia and Izyum regions are regrouping along the Donetsk front. Ukraine also says its troops are closing in on the eastern city of Lysychansk, which Russian forces captured 2 months ago. An offensive is also ongoing around the Russian-held Kherson region to the south, with Moscow dispatching reinforcements there. Staying with Ukraine, operations of the Russian-controlled Zaporizhia nuclear power plant has come to a complete halt. State agency in charge of the facility says it's disconnected one of the power units at the site for safety purposes. That led to a halt in operations of the power station. According to the agency, preparations are underway to cool down the plant. A few days ago, Kyiv asked local residents to evacuate Russia-held areas around the facility for their own safety. Russia and Ukraine accusing each other of risking a nuclear disaster by shelling the power station. The United Nations has called for the surrounding area to be demilitarized. A new report on poverty in France has revealed the devastating economic effects caused by Europe's sanctions on Russia. Over the Ukraine war, multiple indicators have reached record lows, showing that their lower classes are worse off in decades. Rami Maslahatta reports.
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
Poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people, because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next two economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2% and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance.
France has a pretty good record of having a social safety net for those who are on bottom as far as health care is concerned and other basic necessities. But since Macron got elected, a lot of those things have changed, because Macron has decided that he's going to attack that social safety net.
The report showed that a near universal 85% of France is worried for the future generations. That's also the highest percentage ever recorded. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Staying with Europe, in Sweden, people are heading to the polls for general elections. The polls put the ruling Social Democrats against an unprecedented alliance between the right and the anti-immigration far right. Voters are electing lawmakers to the legislature as well as to local offices across the nation. Opinion polls show a tight race, with Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson having the edge. Her Social Democratic Party has been in power since 2014, but its popularity has been dwindling. Campaign on the current elections has seen parties battle to be the toughest on gang crime. Sweden now tops European statistics for firearm deaths. Soaring inflation and energy crisis in the wake of the war in Ukraine have also taken center stage. Polls will close at 8 p.m. with final results due around midnight. Leader of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, has arrived in Moscow for talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Haniyeh is leading a senior delegation that includes Deputy Chief Saleh Al-Aruri and other members of the Political Bureau. The resistance group says Moscow invited Hamas to discuss mutual ties and other issues, including the situation in Palestine. The Hamas delegation already visited Russia in May amid increased tensions in the occupied Palestinian territories, particularly at Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now, this meeting comes amid heightened tensions between Russia and Israel due to the regime's support for Ukraine and Israel's repeated attacks on Syria. From Bali, I'm now joined by Barry Grossman, political analyst. Barry, good to have you with us. So recently we see more meetings within Hamas resistance groups and also officials and authorities related to the Kremlin. So what's the significance of this? Why is it happening at this stage? And also, let's not forget the fact that what Israel's stance was regarding the war in Ukraine and its stance towards Russia.
Well, to be fair, there was a plan a few years back for Mr. Haniyeh to travel to Moscow, but of course that was canceled by the Russians, who canceled the meeting as a protest about the failure of Palestinians to clean their house and arrange reconciliation between Hamas and Fatah. And more recently, of course, Mr. Haniyeh has managed to get out from Gaza and has spent most of his time in Qatar, but has been traveling around trying to garner support for the Palestinian cause. There have been a number of mid-level meetings held between the Russian Foreign Service and Hamas in recent weeks in Qatar. And of course, it's a natural progression for him to go to Moscow and have higher level talks, although not the highest level. He will not be meeting Mr. Putin. He has met with Russian Foreign Minister, Mr. Lavrov. And none of this is surprising, because, of course, the Russians have always been somewhat willing to support the Palestinian cause. But we shouldn't be mistaken about this. Russian foreign policy is transparently driven by self-interest. And there certainly is a long-standing bond between Russia and the occupation. More often than not, Russia and before that the Soviet Union supported the occupation. But there have been times, for example, in the aftermath of the 67 war, where the Soviet Union switched sides and embraced the Arab position at the expense of the occupation. But as things stand, I mean, Hamas has nothing to lose, obviously, in having this meeting, because it has been very unfairly tarred with the terrorist brush by the American political apparatus. And of course, just having these talks lends a measure of credibility in international eyes to the organization and a measure of legitimacy. But as your introduction pointed out, Russia is now in a big fight with the Atlantic world in the Ukraine as a result of Russia doing what any of the key Atlantic world countries would themselves have done probably much earlier than Russia decided to do it. And in the middle of this battle, Israel has unashamedly taken the usual hypocritical position in support of the U.S. position and the Atlantic world position, very often against the Russian position. And so it stands to reason that any reluctance there might otherwise be to have the high-level meetings with Hamas would go out of the window as a warning to occupation officials, as it's sort of shot across the bow, if you like.
Okay, appreciate the insight. Barak Grossman, political analyst in Bali, Indonesia. Millions of pilgrims from across the world are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Kerala for the annual commemoration of Erbil. Pilgrims, many of them from Iran, are making the journey toward Kerala on foot. The city houses the shrine of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. This year, the pilgrimage, that's one of the largest religious congregations in the world, reaches its peak on the 17th of September. Erbil marks the 40 days after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. On that day, the Imam and dozens of his companions were martyred during the Battle of Karbala nearly 14 centuries ago. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, September 11th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Anand Mohan from India, Ajit Kumar from India, and Lars Skoland from Sweden. Many thanks for that. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, and as I have repeated many times in this program, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers at IRIB English Radio. You know why? Because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. So, here, as usual, we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read them, including an email from Ivan A. Zeleny, one of our old and regular listeners from Russia. Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And Adita Pratika from India has sent an email. And here we've received an email from Dario Gabrielli from Italy, one of our old and regular listeners. And the last but not the least is an email from Harold Seuss, one of our old listeners from Austria. Please stay with us. And here we go to see what Ivan A. Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, has said. Dear friends in IRIB English Radio, a few days ago, I was glad to hear a program on a Muslim topic in which a male announcer was quoting the Noble Quran. When the announcer spoke, a beautiful nasheed sounded in the background. If this report is correct, please send me your QSL card or EQSL or a verification letter. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, and please accept our deepest and warmest appreciations to you for sending us this email. It's really great that our listeners let us know their views about IRIB English radio programs, just like you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners. Again, thank you for this email. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Wish you all the best. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification, Ivan. And as I said in the beginning of the program, Bashir Ahmad, one of our old and regular listeners from Bangladesh, has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Hello, I'm Bashir Ahmad. I have previously sent you several emails talking about current issues, and I really like IRIB English radio programs. Also, I have frequently heard my name in the listeners' special programs. Thank you for mentioning my name in your radio. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Bashir Ahmad, and many thanks for sending us this email. It's an honor to have special and unique listeners like you, Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh. And wish you all the best. Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, thank you for reflecting your views in this program. So my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Adita Pritika from India has sent us an email, a short message. Let's see what he or she says. Hello, IRIB. I am Adita, writing from Tamil Nadu, India. I am a new DXer and I am 20 years old. I feel glad that I'm sending one of my first reception reports towards IRIB. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Adita from India. So you are a DXer, but we welcome you as a new listener of IRIB English Radio, and it's an honor to have a new listener at IRIB English Radio. Adita, we wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you soon, and please let us know your views about IRIB English radio programs. Thank you again. We wish you all the best, and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And from Italy, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Dario Gabrielli. Let's see what Dario says. Dear friends, my name is Dario and I am 57 years old and I live in northeast of Italy in a village situated near Venice. With pleasure, a few days ago, I listened to your English program on the frequency of 11,645 kilohertz. I want to send you some details about the programs in MP3 file because the reception was not clear. If the reception report corresponds to your programming, I would like to receive your confirmation with QSL or EQSL with the complete data of the confirmed transmission and signature of the verifier. Thank you in advance. Salam, ciao, warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course, IRIB English Radio. Please accept our gratitude to you for this email, Dario Gabrielli, as you send many emails and letters from Italy to us. And we're so happy that the signals of our radio are received in your region as you live in northeast of Italy in a village situated near Venice. So please accept our EQSL card as verification. Dario Gabrielli from Italy, we wish you all the best. And of course, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Here we have an email from one of our old and regular listeners. Yes, Harald Seuss from Austria. Harald Seuss says, dear staff from the English department or IRIB English Radio, I was glad to hear again the signal here in Austria. This time I spent 2 weeks in a DX camp in southern part of Austria beside a lake. I lived in my tent. We all in the group were listening to radio stations. So I made a reception report and hope you can verify it by QSL card. I wish you all the best for further transmissions. Your listener, Harald Seuss. Salam and warm greetings to you, Harald Seuss. And thank you very much for letting us know your experience beside a lake and your experience of listening to IRIB English Radio with your companions. That's great. We wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And please accept our electronic QSL card as a verification, Harald Seuss from Austria. So we had a very good time together. But before saying goodbye and before ending this edition of Listeners Special, I want to thank those of our great listeners who sent us reception reports and emails, including Anand Mohan, Atij Kumar, Lars Eskoland, Harald Seuss, Ivan A. Zeleny, Bashir Ahmad, Adita Pratika, and Dario Gabrielli. Many thanks for being with us and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The passing away of Queen Elizabeth II may be a sad day for a lot of people, especially in the UK, but at the same time, there are many who do not think about the Queen in positive terms. Some examples: the massacre in Northern Ireland, chemical attack by British forces in Iraq, the role it played in a coup against Iran's Mossadegh government. Well, those are just some of the things that happened during her watch over the UK. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will review some of the atrocities committed by the UK while the Queen resided at her palace and ask, was her role really ceremonial? And isn't it time to abolish the monarchy? A question that many are asking at this point. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Assistant Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Tehran, Arya Barzan Mohammadi, joins us. And we have Senior Research Fellow at the Global Policy Institute at the London Metropolitan University, George Zamir Yeli, who joins us from Budapest.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. George, let me first start with you. We are taking a look at the headlines on mainstream media that are mourning the Queen pretty much nonstop from the time this occurred. And, of course, now Charles' accession to power. But then there are those that are calling for abolish the monarchy, which is a hashtag that's now trending loudly on social media. What are your thoughts on that aspect of the news about the Queen's death and, of course, Charles ascending to the throne?
Well, I don't think, to be honest, that there will be much change in British foreign policy were the monarchy abolished. I don't think the Queen ever really had much of a say in governmental policy. In fact, the Queen, even in realms where she might have had a say, an influence, for instance, in the Church of England. I mean, she's the head of the Church of England. She really, you know, took a hands-off approach. She was very much a ceremonial monarch, very popular for being so. But in terms of the foreign policy and all of the objectionable aspects of British foreign policy during her lengthy reign, and you mentioned a few of them, she really didn't make those decisions. And therefore, you know, whether under King Charles or a republic, and, you know, all governmental decisions made by Prime Minister Liz Truss, I don't think there would be a huge difference in policy.
Well, there are some calls, however, that are being made to that effect, but more so, and maybe worth mentioning in a sense, If you can tell us what you recall, Mr. Muhammad, about some of the atrocities or conflicts, perhaps, that happened during her watch. There's a list of them, some of them that perhaps stand out as you had the Iraq and Syria, where Operation Shader took place from the year 2014. You have the Persian Gulf War, the Sierra Leone Civil War. I'm looking down a list here, the Suez Crisis. Of course, the Iraq War, Yemen, and Afghanistan wars worth also mentioning. Is it correct to see these as being what she oversaw and could have done something about, or completely detached from these occurrences during the time that she obviously was alive?
Well, I agree with your other guest that Queen's authority is very much ceremonial on the paper. However, we mustn't forget that she meets. She used to meet with Prime Minister on a weekly basis and provide advices. That's one thing, how she could have had some influence on decision-making. And also, what we didn't see, or what she should have done, is to express her disagreement with some of the atrocities that you have mentioned, you know, loudly and publicly. I mean, I couldn't understand. I mean, what, for example, what happened in Kenya just maybe days after she took the throne, she became the queen, and the atrocities against the Mau Mau movement in that country. I mean, according to the New York Times, the response by the colonial authorities over there led to the establishment of vast system of detention camps and torture, abuse and killing of tens of thousands of people. And even the British government eventually agreed to pay £20 million in lawsuit compensation to the survivors of that atrocities. So, in response or in answering your question, yes, the Queen enjoyed only ceremonial powers. But as a human being, she should have done more to at least detach herself from some of the atrocities that her governments have committed, from the coup against Mossadegh to what happened in Kenya, to the apartheid regime in South Africa, the exercises, the acts against human rights over there, and you can mention many others, and not only that, we shouldn't forget the legacy, the historical legacy of the British Empire. So we shouldn't just look at her reign from 1952, but we should go further or back to the history, look back, to the history, and see what kind of atrocities and crimes that the British Empire committed from the times of King George II,
sure,
to the times of Elizabeth II.
Well, Joyce Amoyeli, we're looking at what our guest said here about Mau Mau, and this happened right after her father's death. So you have her then take over the throne, and you have what our guest there referred to as a source in terms of how he explained it, and that was the New York Times, leading to the establishment of a vast system of detention camps, as our guest there quoted the New York Times, torture, rape, castration, and the killing of tens of thousands of people. Since that was right after her father's death and when she took over the throne, could she not have then played a role in preventing from that happening then?
I doubt it. I think that had she interfered in any aspect of British policy, whether in foreign affairs or in domestic affairs, it would have led to the swift demise of the monarchy. At least, you know, she would definitely have believed that was the case. I mean, the British worked out a formula for what they called a constitutional monarchy, even though Great Britain actually doesn't have a written constitution. It's a constitutional monarchy, which means that the monarch is essentially a non-political person, doesn't in any way interfere in any aspect of governmental policy. I mean, the governments are formed, they go to the Queen, establishes the government, and then, you know, when governments are closed down shop, you know, they go and tell the Queen that that's it, the government is dissolved. That's her role. If she were to start saying, well, I don't like this policy and I don't like that policy, it would have brought about a constitutional crisis and would have led to the demise of the monarchy. And I think she saw her role as someone who wants the monarchy to continue. She wants to be the person who inherited the crown from her father and who will then pass the crown on to her son. Uh-huh. And doubtless Charles thinks that he's going to pass the crown on to his son. I mean, that's the way the system works. You can't really expect them to operate according to rules that you may like, but they obviously don't identify with.
Sure. Well, here's the problem that many see, and maybe you could shed more light on this or explain this to us, Mr. Mohammed, and that is the fact that, according to the way our guest describes it, if this was a one-off or maybe something that occurred twice during her 70 years when she had the throne, it could be dismissed as such, perhaps. And many may maybe look at it in a different way, but there are many who are holding the monarchy, and in particular her, responsible, since this has occurred so many times. For example, one of the social media reactions: if the Queen had apologized for slavery, colonialism, and neo-colonialism, and urged the Crown to offer reparations for the millions of lives taken in their names, then perhaps I would do the human being thing, or the human thing, and feel bad. As a Kenyan, I feel nothing. This theater is absurd. There are many people who hold her responsible. Do you think then, therefore, that she, again, could have exerted some type of influence when you're having repeated acts that spell that are of this nature.
Of course. I mean, she was a human being after all. I mean, let me disagree with your guest, with the professor, because just years ago when, the voting for Brexit took place, everyone knew that Queen was against Brexit. So probably if she could have voted, she would have voted again for no Brexit or not exiting the European Union. So people in England knew about Queen's opinion regarding Brexit. And she must have expressed it in the closed circles. And then this has found its way to the newspapers and, tabloids, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't see what was the problem with, making her opinion known to the people regarding some of these, atrocities that you are mentioning. And I understand the role of monarchy in a constitutional monarchy in Europe, but we shouldn't forget that these things are not, issues of budget or appointing this minister or removing that minister or canceling this or that program. These are really, really severe, decisions with the severe consequences that, one should have reacted to them and as a human being and had a moral responsibility to actually oppose them if she thought that these were, against her moral stance or ethics, or agreed with them. So that's one thing. The other thing is that the monarchy, if we look at it even as a ceremonial or in something that is written not in a written constitution or in a constitutional monarchy. If you look at other countries, such as Scandinavian monarchies, we see some sort of a socialist monarchy. We don't see the same luxurious expending and the lifestyle that we see in British monarchy. And also, they have less of controversies from now and then. We know that the controversy surrounding the issues regarding Prince Andrew and other things. British people, many of them, would demand more clarity and more responsiveness regarding taxpayers' money being spent on luxurious weddings or ceremonies or lifestyles, while at the moment, people are struggling with their fuel providing fuel for their cars and paying for their electricity bills. This is not to say that we are going to say to the British people what system they should choose for themselves. This is up to the British people. But we shouldn't forget that the British monarchy's legacy is not exclusive to Britain. It goes beyond that. And currently, King Charles III, he has a lot of challenges to deal with. Namely, first of all, a second referendum, Scottish independence referendum is on the table. So we might see a potential breakup of the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. The unraveling of the Commonwealth, and reckoning with the unsavory past, parts of the royal family's past and its colonial legacy. So we have to see what kind of King Charles III would be. Is he going to remain silent on most of these issues or quiet, or he will decide to speak up and try to apologize to people of India, people in Africa, and other Commonwealth and other former colonies?
George Samioli, one of the questions that has been asked, and perhaps you can clarify for us or explain to us what the real reason is, and that is why the Queen never visited Israel. I mean, you read one source that says because the Queen did not like what Israel did in the occupied territories in terms of, the violation of Palestinians as a whole. Others say it's because of trade deals with the Persian Gulf Arab countries, didn't want to upset them. But many sources are pointing towards the violations of Palestinians, which then doesn't fall in line with the rest of the violations that took place on different countries that were part of the colonialism that the UK exercised.
That's a very good question, and it's it may be all of those things. She also probably has it's a sore point with her about the terrorism that took place during the time of the British occupation of Palestine, during the time of the Mandate, Israeli terrorists, well, they weren't Israeli then, but the Stern Gang, actually were murdering British officials. And that may well be a sore point with her. I don't know. It definitely is odd, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was some issue that that she feels strongly about what happened during the years of the British Mandate in Palestine.
Okay. Well, you talked about Prince Charles there, Arya Barzan Mohammed. There's a social media again reaction to him taking over the throne, and that is, why should there even be a throne for him to take over? What is going to be the purpose? I mean, does that serve the 21st century type of governance that should exist? You know, those questions are resurfacing, especially right now. So isn't that a valid point of view for many to have, especially at this point in time where the UK, like many other European countries, but the UK is suffering economically so badly that many would question, why should taxpayers' money go towards whatever it is that he's going to be doing?
It's not a secret to anyone that King Charles III doesn't enjoy the same popularity that his mother enjoyed inside the UK, at least. I mean, her mother, opinion the world has about her, was very popular inside the UK, or at least in England, if we exclude Scotland and Ireland. But Prince Charles doesn't enjoy even the same popularity inside England. And the reason, part of that is because of the story of Diana and the divorce and the family matters, private matters. And other part is that he is very, his style is very politically active style. So he likes to talk, when he was Prince of Wales, the Crown Prince, he usually commented about politics, about, what type of ministers should a certain prime minister choose, or what type of policies is preferable. So he was very talkative about it. And one of the famous sentences or that he mentioned was after the return of Hong Kong to China, when he joked with it and called it a Chinese takeaway, which made the Chinese government very angry with that comment. So his activism might create some sort of controversy for him. It either could make him more popular if his activism is on the side of the people, if he decide to cut some of the budgets that for luxury spending and lifestyle, and try to treat members of his family, especially his brother, like any other person from the public, or his activism might become a source of a problem for him, especially with regard to issues such as Scottish referendum. Countries like Australia might choose to break away from, not the Commonwealth, but to choose another system for themselves instead of, a monarchy, and choose to become a republic. So there are a lot of issues that might resurface during King Charles' reign, while there was an agreement that they should keep kept quiet during her mother's reign, because of the prestige, international prestige that she enjoyed, and King Charles III so far doesn't enjoy it.
Okay. Final question goes to you, George Samioli. When you take a look at how the Queen was, and as you explained it, and as the actually the role warrants, is for it to be a ceremonial role. But isn't there a possibility that Prince Charles might not maybe hold that on paper, but might exert his opinions, his thoughts? Do you think that that may happen? And again, given the current political, not paralysis, but the electricity that exists right now in terms of just the economic pressure that's exerted on the UK, again, just like many other European countries, that perhaps he may come in and take a more active role in that regard. What do you think?
Well, that's a possibility. The problem is that if he were to take a more active role, I think that would make him that much more unpopular, because it's known that, you know, in terms of how he sees the world, he's a very much a World Economic Forum type, one of the Davos group, and I would think that he would push towards a kind of a net zero, you know, answer to energy problems, which means that he would be pushing for renewables. The problem is that that's kind of one of the reasons why Britain has got itself into the mess that it's got into, which is that it hasn't invested sufficiently in the tried and true fossil fuels. It's gambled everything on renewables, and that's turned out to be a rather foolish gamble. So if he were to push British energy policy in that direction, which was the same direction that Boris Johnson pushed, and that was very unpopular, then I think it's going to exacerbate Britain's energy problems. So, you know, to the extent that he does have politics, I don't think they're politics that the British people would identify with. As I say, he's very much a part of the Davos group. You know, he's one of these people, you know, he likes to hang out with George Soros, Bill Gates,
right.
And all the people at the World Economic Forum. It's not going to go down terribly well among the British people if he decides to go down that path.
Thank you for that. Senior Research Fellow at the Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University, George Samioli from Budapest. And thank you, Arya Barzan Mohammadi, Assistant Professor of Middle East Studies, University of Tehran. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitakway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadili, and you are now listening to the program Q&A on Islamic beliefs. Joining us in the studio today is our dear friend and esteemed guest speaker, Sheikh Noor Muhammad, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sheikh, I welcome you to the studio and, of course, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sheikh.